Sicko. There's an ongoing, for those of you who follow sports in America, which I mean, I understand it's probably none of you. Okay. There's a Tammy's eyes just glazed over.
I know what you're talking about. The bullying issue?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
It's a Miami.
That's right. Very good.
Sure.
Very good.
I'll tell you how I know.
Wait, explain the situation. Explain the case. Explain the case.
Honestly, I don't really know the whole situation. I watch the NBC News now and then.
Okay, so there's
so I had something on it.
There's a football player. There's a football team called the Miami Dolphins. Everybody know what American football is? You all know that? Exactly. It's a bunch of men beating each other up. That's exactly what it is. Okay? So there on the team, there's an offensive lineman who's 6'5", 300 pounds. That's a lot of kilo for you. I don't know what that is. Okay? Huge, huge person who left the team. And so why did he leave the team? He said because the other offensive linemen were bullying him. They were sending him threatening text messages.
The other ones on the team?
On his own team were bullying him.
Why would they do that?
Why would they do that? So the answer, as it became clear later on, the reason they were doing it was because he wasn't pulling his weight. The offensive line works as a unit. And if one of them isn't pulling his weight, then they all suffer and the whole team suffers. They felt he wasn't pulling his weight. Essentially, they felt he wasn't tough enough. And so they felt that in order to play this game, you have to be mentally tough.
How much money did he get paid?
Oh, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just a ridiculous amount of money. But you know what I'm saying? So the way they were going to toughen him up was by giving him adversity in the locker room. You know what I'm saying? By toughening him up. And he couldn't handle that, and he left the team. And it raised this huge issue of confronting adversity. Can a person who's that big and that strong, like an offensive lineman for an NFL football team, is huge. He's huge. He's strong. Can he be bullied? Can that person be bullied? Is there a position?
Why not?
You have to do with size.
Remember,
Mr.
T.
Only bigger.
Much bigger.
You'd be afraid to run into this guy in an alleyway. Like, he's just...
These people are huge. Anyway, and it recalled a very famous movie called A Few Good Men. You've all seen A Few Good Men, if you play, where they say, did you order the code red? Like, why? You said, because you want that person on that wall. We need him on that wall. We need that person to act in that way at that time. Meaning behavior that's not normally acceptable is sometimes acceptable in order to achieve the necessary goal. Everybody understand what I'm saying?
Required.
Sometimes you have to act in ways in order to achieve the goal, in order to achieve the necessary goal. You have to act. Sometimes, meaning...
No, I understand what you're... No.
No?
Well, you normally, when the profession would probably be accepted on a football field, you want the most aggressive player out there.
Correct.
On the offensive.
Correct.
That's what you want. That's what you're hired to.
This isn't like, you know, your job. This isn't the English classroom. This isn't, you know. Exactly. This isn't, you know, the guys on it, this isn't the trading floor. This isn't an insurance salesman. These are violent. Violent people doing violent things. And the nimshal obviously is... That's right. My nimshal, the reason I mentioned this, we're going to talk about the obviously the confrontation between Yaakov and Esau. Right? But I think about this in the context of the confrontation or lack thereof between America and Iran and the connection between why is Israel so belligerent and America says, no, we can talk about it, we can work it out. You know what I'm saying? If we just give a little bit, they'll give a little bit. And I think to myself, we're just talking in different contexts. Like, we want to play football, and you want to be nice on the, you know, in the locker room. If everybody understands what I'm trying to say. And this issue comes up specifically as Yaakov approaches Esav. And I wonder, are they playing different games in a sense? As we'll soon see. As we will, God willing, see. What? You could say it's different interests, or you could say it's just different tactics. They view the world in Israel would say. What's that?
It doesn't
work
out.
Who?
There's a lot less at stake. They've got a lot more room to.
So you could say that, you could suggest that. Yeah, absolutely correct. Right. So when the stakes are higher, you're willing to do other things. You're willing to push yourself farther. You're willing to
do what you need to do.
Do what you need to do to survive. Well said. Perfectly said. Okay. In that context, let's start the beginning of the parasha, Parashat Vayishlach. Esav is coming. I sent out on the Facebook. Everybody saw the 613 Tower Avenue on the Facebook? Nobody saw it?
No.
Yes, I saw it.
You saw it. Famous. Okay. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim defonav v'litzav achiv arza seir sedei Edom. Yaakov sent messengers to Esav to seir to Edom. Vayitzav otam nemu. He told the messengers to say, Ko tamun la'adoni le'esav, Ko amar abdecha Yaakov, im lavan garti va'eichar ad ata. So says your servant Yaakov, I was with Lavan. I'm a little bit late. I'm late until now. How late is he? How much late is he?
20 years,
right. I'm 20 years late. Sorry, I apologize. I have oxen and donkeys and sheep and servants and maidservants. And I sent them to tell my master to find favor in your eyes. So the messengers came back and they said, Banu el achicha el Esav. We have come to your brother, to Esav, and he's coming. He also wants to meet you, and he has 400 men with him. Okay? Well, interesting, I'll just note, what's interesting about the pasuk? Banu el achicha el Esav. We came to your brother, Esav. To Esav. Implication being?
There's more than one brother.
Well, no, there's two. He's the same guy, so why does he say Banu el achicha? Okay. He is your brother, meaning, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a thing.
It's a thing. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think we came to him as your brother, but he's...
Banu el achicha.
We came to him as your brother, but he's not taking that into account.
In Rashi?
Nothing.
Very good. You could be Rashi. Rashi, Banu el achicha el Esav. Shehayita Omer Achihu, you would think he's your brother. Aval hu noheg imocha ke Esav harasha. But he is like Esav. Odenu bisinato. He hates you. Okay, Banu el achicha el Esav. Okay, now what we have to do when we study this text is we have to study the text and we have to study the drash, like the super commentary, the commentary that comes with it, the way we understand it. Okay?
Is this the first time they're seeing each other after?
First time they're seeing each other.
Life.
So we know Esav hated him until now. We haven't seen Esav until now. Between then and now, we've never seen Esav. This is the first time we're meeting Esav. So Yaakov assumes, correctly or incorrectly, Esav still hates him. He doesn't know anything. All he knows is Esav is coming to greet him, and Esav's coming with 400 men. What kind of men? Obviously. Yeah, he's coming with an army. Okay, why would Esav come with an army? From Yaakov?
He's his enemy.
Make an impression.
Intimidate, make an impression. What's that? That's how he travels.
Yeah.
That's how he rolls. Okay? Okay. Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzelo. What? Oh, Perek Lamed Bet, chapter 32, Pasuk Chet. Lamed Bet Chet. Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzelo. Yaakov is exceedingly afraid. Vayetzelo. Vayetzer. Translation? You cheated. What? According to Mr. High School. And he was?
It distressed him.
Oh, Tzar.
Vayetzer from Tzar? From anybody else? Anyone else have anything? What do you have? Distressed, okay. Meaning he is exceedingly afraid, and he's even more afraid, right? He's very, very, very afraid. Vayachat et ha'am asherito, v'tatzon v'tabakar v'hagmalim l'shnei machanot. So he divided the people that were with him, and the tzon, and the bakar, and the gmalim, to two camps. Vayomer, and he said, Im yavo Esav el ha'machane ha'achat v'hikahu, v'haya ha'machane ha'nishar l'fleitah. If Esav comes and destroys one of the two camps, then the second camp will be remnant, will be left. I'm going to continue to read it first, because I want to get to our Rashi and then ask a question. Vayomer Yaakov. And Yaakov said, Elohei Avi Avraham, Elohei Avi Yitzchak, the God of my father Abraham, the God of my father Yitzchak, Hashem Aomer Eli, the God who has said to me, Shuv la'artzecha ulamoratatcha ve'etiva imach, return home.
Katonti mikol. And I will make it good for you.
And I will make it good for you. Katonti mikol hachasadim umikol haemet asher asita et avdecha. Katonti. I am too small. I am not worthy for all the goodness and all the truth that you've done to your servant. Ki b'makli avarti et hayarden hazeh. V'ata hayiti l'shnei machanot. Because when I came, when I crossed over the Yarden going, all I had was the stick in my hand. And now I'm two people, two camps. Hatzileni na miyadachim miyad Esav. Please save me from
my brother.
Again, why miyadachim miyad Esav? Rashi. Miyad achi, she'en nohegi imi ke'ach, ela ke'esav ha'rasha. But what could you say?
He doesn't treat me like a brother.
Well, you could say, if he does treat me like my brother, why do I want to save from him? It's even more dangerous when he treats me like a brother. That's an interesting question. Okay. I'm sure if you look carefully, you'll find a parasha that says that. Positive. I don't know if you'll find it on the daf, but I'm sure you will. Ki yare anochi oto pen yavo v'hikani em abanim. Because I am afraid of him, lest he come and smite me, mother upon children. Va'ata amarta hetev eti bimach, and you have said, I will do good to you. V'samtia zavacha kechol hayam asher lo yisafer me'rov. You said, my children will be kechol hayam, like the sand of the sea, that are uncountable. There's a couple of problems. First, before we get to the fundamental issue, the ideological problem, let's go back to Rashi on Pasuk Tet. Okay, he split the camp and he said, Vaya machane anishal plei. This is a very famous Rashi. Now I'm going to ask you a question that my neighbor asked me. Vaya machane anishal plei ta, says Rashi, al korcho. How will they survive? Al korcho. Ki alachem imo. I see Rashi. There's a Rashi on Ted that says there's a long Rashi that I'm skipping, and then the second Rashi, Bahaya. I'll read it again. Bahaya Machaneh. You see it?
Okay.
You see it? Bahaya Machaneh Nishal Lefleita. Right. The first question. So he says, Yaakov says, I'm going to split my people into two camps, and if Esav destroys the first camp, then
I'll have the second
camp. Why? Everybody understand the problem with that? How is splitting into two camps going to help you? How? Esav goes and destroys the first camp, and then what does he do? There are two camps. Oh, whatever, forget it.
They'll have time to run away
from the 400 men. Mm-hmm. Yaakov couldn't run away from his father-in-law Laban and their sheep, and he's got to run away from Esav and their 400 warriors. Where are they going to go?
They're traveling pretty slow.
Yeah, them and the women and the children and the camels and the sheep
and the children.
Where are they going to go? How is it that the second camp will survive? Why is splitting into two camps going to help you? So says Rashi. What does Rashi say? Al korcho. Al korcho means by force. Ki alachem imo. Because I will fight with him. How does that help? What's my problem?
He can only protect half of them. He can only defend half of them.
Meaning, manafshach. If you're going to fight...
Fight in the beginning.
Bring everyone. And if you're not going to fight...
What? While they're busy with one group, then the other group will come from the other side. Like, that's a military tactic. That divide and conquer.
Good. What should you do? If you really were going to do that, how would you divide the camp?
Half the men.
You would take all the women and the children, you would send them as far away as humanly possible, then you would take half the men, you divide them up, and you would split them half there and half there.
You wouldn't put the women and children first.
Right. What's Yaakov's military tactic? Does anybody want to share it with me?
Well, it goes on. And he prepares himself
for 3 days. Hold on. So that's according to Rashi. Rashi says, Hitkin atzmo l'shalosha dvarim. He prepared 3 ways. L'doron, he sent a gift. L'tfila, ula milchama. And for war. L'daron, we know about Tov Rimcha Panav. He sent the gift away. L'tfila, Elohei Avi Avraham. L'milchama, he prepared for war. V'haya ha-machane ha-nishar l'fleita. What's his preparation for war? How does Yaakov prepare for war?
The gift,
he sends gifts. He sends just ridiculous amounts of sheep and cattle and stuff to Esav. He sends gifts. He prays to God. What's Yaakov's war preparation? This is my neighbor, he says to me, he says, you know that Rashi? He says, I don't get it. How did he prepare for war?
Well,
this is kind of
like survivors.
What's that?
It's kind of like what was going on, and you're saying, within one time, where the rest of the world is saying to Iran, we'll give you billions and billions. They're giving them gifts.
Right.
Asking nothing in return. They're preparing. They're giving him gifts. I'm not sure who's going to do the tefillah. I guess we are. And then Israel's preparing for war.
No. But I'm asking in Yaakov. I know what Israel's doing. And I can back and accept. How is... No, he said spiritual way. He prayed.
Right. That's the way that...
He says every time, this is a great principle, whenever you're facing an enemy, you have to do three things. One, try to appease them. Because it's always best not to fight, if you can appease them. Doron. First of all, would we agree, by the way? Would we agree with that?
Evidently.
What?
Yes.
Do we agree with that?
Here, take Gaza.
It depends what it is.
Right. Do we agree with this?
Not all the time. Once.
Why? Because when you do it once, then they're going to say, that worked well.
It didn't work the first time. It's not going to work.
When I say the word appeasement, what do you think of? No, what do you think of? Appeasement, history, what do we think of?
Giving
in. Peace and
out. Exactly. You don't think of Neville Chamberlain? Sure, I'll give in, and that will resolve it. And of course, what does that do?
Nothing.
Of course. So do we really believe in appeasement? Is that really a good idea? When our enemies are threatening us, we say to them, here, take, maybe we could all just get along.
Take Gaza.
Try to be a mensch. I give you presents because you're threatening me.
You always try and mediate. You always try and come to some kind of a resolution.
That's not what he said.
Sometimes the presents can be used against you.
That's not what he said. That's not what he said. He didn't say negotiation. He said doron. Right? That's what the Rashi said. Mm-hmm. Gifts. The second thing is prayer.
He actually says tribute.
Yeah. Tribute. What's a tribute?
Don't know.
No, tribute is a gift. That's what it is. Doron is tribute. You threaten me, if I give you enough tribute, then hopefully you won't attack. That was a good tactic way back when. If what?
If they were fighting over something.
No, that's a good tactic if...
Works.
No, if the other guy is more powerful than you, you give a tribute. In the hopes that, oh, isn't he going to come back? What's the answer? Mm-hmm. Isn't he going to come back?
Probably.
The answer is, of course he's going to come back. But you hope that... He thinks, of course it buys you time, but you hope that he thinks the next time when he comes back, he doesn't want to destroy you because he likes the money that you give him.
Yeah, but what you said is important. He's more powerful than you. Meaning you've got more to lose by going to war first.
Correct.
Than getting the gift.
Correct. Yeah. So what's the war tactic here? Anybody, what's the war tactic?
It sounds very good. It's giving the bully your sandwiches on the playground.
Of course it's giving the bully your sandwiches in the playground. Why? And so why do you give him your sandwiches? So he won't beat you up.
Yes, it's less scary than it has in the war.
Correct. Exactly. What, does it work? All that means is, and what does that mean for tomorrow? Of course he's going to take your money, your lunch money too. Of course. In the meantime, what, you're going to do what?
In the meantime, you're physically training so that the time will come when you can...
But you're not solving my problem. What's Yaakov thinking? What's his military strategy? But do you see, what's his military strategy?
His brother, he's conflicted.
What?
Rashi,
1 second. And that's why he sends him all these amazing gifts. Look how much stuff I have.
No, but in terms of like the camp and the party, I think he's trying to say to him like, you won, you're big. Look at us, we're just this measly little. You know,
we're not worth your effort.
We're not. But I'm saying that the bracha that you think that I think because this all comes down to the bracha.
Correct.
Right. So I think it goes back to the bracha. I think he's trying to show him that, you know, whatever you're. Either it didn't work or whatever you're jealous about, that's not... That's
what's the second... Read me the second pasuk of the parsha. Of this parsha, parsha Vayishlach.
I have lots of things.
Yeah, read me the second parsha, pasuk.
Well, I actually thought Vayitzar means he became narrow.
Vayitzar. Oh, interesting. Okay. What is... Read me the second... What does he say? Banu alachichai. Yeah, Vayitzar v'tam neimor. What should I tell to Esau? Vayili, next pasuk. I just want you to know.
But all the things he's listing are gift items.
Are gift items. Okay.
They're potential gift items.
At Ramban on Pasuk Tet. Ramban on Pasuk Tet. V'haya ha-machane ha-nishar lifleita. Says Ramban. Al derech ha-pshat. In simple interpretation, amar ze be'ulai. V'haya. Perhaps ha-machane ha-nishar lifleita. Maybe the second camp will survive. Maybe one camp will survive. Why? Maybe in the time that he's busy destroying one half of my entire family, the others will run away. Does that make sense? Not really. Tashuv chamato. Or maybe after he destroys half my camp, maybe he'll calm down. and won't want to destroy us. Oh, tavola matzala me'et Hashem. Maybe, you know, God will save us. So what's his military strategy? What's the military strategy?
He's hedging his bets.
What?
He's hedging his bets.
That what?
Buying his time.
The miracle will happen.
The miracle will happen. He's hedging his bets for a miracle. Says
all of those examples are miraculous. Lamadcha
Torah derech eretz. The Torah tells you derech eretz. Lo yaniach adam kol memono bezavit echad. Don't put all your money in one corner. Or how do we say it? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Right? So, great. Okay? What's his military strategy? I again ask you. My neighbor across the way, Yaakov Cohen, he says, what's the military strategy?
Bind
your fingers, cross your fingers, and hope for the best. How's that for a military strategy? Like, you know, like, what?
He's not crossing his fingers.
Right, exactly.
Well, it didn't have any connotation then.
How would you like if Tzahal says, we've got a plan. What's our plan? Well, if they destroy Ashkelon, we've still got Ashdod.
Well, we kind of did say that. Except we called it Gaza and Ashkelon.
I don't agree necessarily with that, but okay, that's the plan. Let's read on in Ramban. The Ramban here is fascinating. Okay? V'Rashi katav, so Rashi says, V'haya machaner nishar lifleita, the camp that will remain will be surviving, al korcho ki alachem imo. Rashi says, not pshat. Rashi reads in that I will fight with him. But remember, that's not pshat. Pshat is not to fight. Pshat is, I split my camp and hope that he doesn't destroy us. L'tfilah, l'daron, l'milchama. Okay? V'ra'iti ba'midrash, he says, I saw in the midrash, ma'asa, what did Yaakov do? Zayanam b'vifnin, v'hilbisham b'gadim l'vanim b'bachutz. He armed them,
gave them concealed
served, yeah, what's the word? He armed them concealed weapons, and he put them on white externally, meaning he gave them all white flags, right? But he said, make sure you got your guns also ready. That he's ready, willing to surrender, but if the last resort, if you have to fight, then we'll fight. That's what the Midrash says. Okay. Chein ikar. Blah, blah, blah. Hakanava kavanabaze. Okay, what is the meaning? Ki Yaakov yodea she'en zaro kalu nofil biyad Esav. Yaakov knows, he says, that his children will not be totally destroyed at the hands of Esav. Im ki yinatzel amachaneh ha'achar al kol panim. He says, even if Esav comes to decimate us, even if Esav comes to wipe us out, some of us will be saved. Read on. V'gam ze yirmoz. This will also be a remez. Remez? A hint. Shelo yigzeru aleinu b'nei Esav limchot et shemenu. That the children of Esav will not utterly destroy us. But they will do terrible things to us, to part of us, with part of, in parts of their lands. Melech echad mehem gozer be'artzo al momeninu agufenu. One of their kings in one of their lands will decree upon us on our money or on our bodies. Umelech echad merachem bimkomo umatzel apleitim. And another king will have compassion and receive the refugees. And that's what they said in Bereshit Rabbah. If one camp comes and is destroyed, Elu achinu shebedarom. Those are our brothers in the south. Ra'u, they said, Kigam l'darot tirmoz zehaparsha. Ramban says, this is an allusion to the future Jewish people they're suffering in the Galut. Who is Esav? Remember, Esav is a reference to Rome, Christianity, Christendom. Where did the Ramban live, and when did he live?
He lived in Spain way before the Inquisition.
When?
At 12.
Way before the Inquisition. What, things were good then too?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I mean, not when he still had the debates and stuff.
And what? Right. There were times of persecution. He says, but mamano gufein. He says. Some part of Esav, he says, if the children of Esav will smite us in one place, there'll always be somewhere else where we can run away to. That's when he lived. Till 1204. Right, till 1204, when he moved to Israel. They kicked him out. Why'd they kick him out?
Because he lost the one.
He lost the debate. Yeah, he won the debate. So they said, "We can't have you here." Okay. Even in the golden age of Spain, it wasn't the golden age. Just, you know, now we live in a golden time. But again, and if Machare Achat V'Yikahu, if there's one camp, if all of Europe is burning, the Jewish people will not be destroyed. There's going to be there's always another place to run to. That's what the Ramban says. That's the promise of Esav. The problem is, so I ask you again. So I said to him, he asked me, where is this? Like, why do all the Parshanim say, what's the fight? The answer is that from the Midrash on, all of the Parshanim, including Rashi, including Ramban, all the way down the line, they all have an exile attitude towards Jewish fighting. What's the exile attitude towards Jewish fighting?
Run away.
And what's our job? Our job is, it's one thing, survival. To be. How do we fight? We don't fight. How do we prepare for war? We prepare for war by only being half decimated. We prepare for war not by not fighting. Remember, where's Yaakov? Yaakov is still on the other side of the Yarden. He hasn't crossed over. Right? Hatzileini na, he's afraid. The whole perspective of Yaakov is a perspective of Yaakov in the exile. And all the Mefarshim talk about it that way. Why? Because that's their experience. We come to this and we say, why are you sending tribute? What are you going to benefit from sending tribute? But that's what they did for years and years and years. What did the Jewish community do? How did they save themselves? The first thing they did, what was the first thing? The kid said, I'm going to kick you out.
They gave taxes.
Well, who told me this? Didn't you tell me this? You said this to me. You read the introduction to the Barbanel or something? What was it you read me?
Yeah.
And what did he say? What did they suggest?
Oh, with the expulsion.
That's right. What did he suggest?
They offered 30,000 pieces of gold to give
the Jews. He writes, Sabrina's reading this to me like with great passion. Where was the introduction to Malachim, I think it was?
He says,
I was there with Ferdinand and Isabella, and I had almost convinced them 30,000 pieces of gold, and they would have let us stay. Finish. And in came
Torquemada, the Grand Inquisitor, brandishing a large cross with the sign of Jesus on it. And he said, he's already been sold once for 30 pieces of silver, now you'll sell him for 30,000 pieces of gold.
And that was that.
Are you saying this is the attitude before they're on the other side of the Jordan?
Yes.
Once they cross over, we have a different attitude.
We have to have a different attitude. You can't, that is the attitude of the Galut too. That's my interpretation. How do you fight for war? You fight for war by trying to survive. Why? Because you're at a disadvantage. You're powerless. What are you going to do? Esav is coming with 400 men. What can you do?
Why is it different words in Christ? Because
it's on
the
land. You're in your own place.
What?
But it's your place. It's different when you're defending your own turf.
Let me ask you this question. I want to ask it this way. It says the Midrash. Okay? The Midrash says, Amar Rabbi Yehonatan. Okay, it says Rabbi Yonatan, Kol mishter rotzel l'ratzot melech o shilton. If you want to appease a king or a ruler, ve'eino yodea darkam, and you don't know how they operate, yaniach parsha zo lefanav, just open up this parsha, v'yilmad heimenet chasim piyusim v'bitziyum. This is your blueprint for how to deal with the local whatever. Really? Is that our blueprint? Would you tell Netanyahu, tell you what, you want to know how to deal with Iran? Open up this parsha, do what Yaakov did. First send Iran money, then split Israel into two major zones that if they nuke half of Israel, the other half will survive, and then pray to God. Is that the way we should do it?
Well, that's the way the internet, rest of the world is saying we should do it.
That's the way.
We're not in the scholar mentality.
What?
We're not in the scholar
mentality. That's exactly my point. That's exactly my point. That all of the Parshanim, it's impossible for them, it's impossible to ask Rashi, living in France, in 12 whatever, 10 whatever? 11, whatever, okay.
1096.
To have our attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was in the Galut. He was in the position. He was in a position of power. He was in a position. He was in a position of survival, and we're not in the position of survival. We're in the position of growth and promotion and building a nation and of power.
Those of us that are here. Those of us that are not here are
of
a different mindset.
So that's the question. Oh, thank you. Very good. One second. Let's talk about that. So all the Mefarshim are stuck with this problem. Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo. Yaakov was very afraid. And they're all stuck with a fundamental theological problem. Why is he afraid? Why should he not be afraid?
Hashem
A God promised him, not once, twice. God came to him twice and said, I'll make it good for you. And Yaakov even says, V'ata amarta etev etiv imach. What are you so afraid of? God said it'll be fine. So what are you so afraid of?
And he says, I'm not worthy.
He said that half the nation might survive. But he knows that there's going to be survival from him, but that doesn't necessarily say...
So one interpretation, some Mefarshim say, that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yaakov said, yeah, God said he would do good for me. Not right now. Right? Some Mefarshim say that what it means that Yaakov was afraid of, maybe all of his children would be destroyed and he'd have to build from nothing again. He'd have to start a whole new family. He loved these children. He didn't want other children. He didn't want to start from new. You know, like as it was with Avraham. When Avraham had the promise, he had Yishmael, but it wasn't enough. He had to start over. And so that's what Yaakov was afraid of. Others say,
you can't be small on
it, you know, like, so therefore, but that's not the question, though. The question isn't why did he do the Ishtabas. Ishtabas makes perfect sense.
Why was he so scared?
Yeah. Okay, so what's the classic answer? Anybody know?
It says katonti.
Anybody know? Oh, very good. Right. But anybody know?
Because he stole the bracha.
What's that?
He stole the bracha.
All the promises were after the bracha. God came to him in Aram and said, go back. I mean, remember, he stole the bracha. He went to Har Moriah. He went to the mountain. He dreamed his dream. And what did God say? God said, I'll take care of you and I'll protect you and I'll bring you back. And then after 20 years, when God came to him and said, you know, Yaakov, it's time to go home. I'm going to make you great. And I'll give you the bracha, etc., etc. Why are you so afraid?
Rashi says he's scared of God.
Why is he so afraid? Does Rashi tell you?
No.
Where are you? Where Rashi?
Well, even if you're
not. Uh-huh. Why is he so afraid?
Shema Yahareg.
Shema Yahareg, he will be killed. Vayetzer im Yaharog, maybe I will kill.
Yeah.
But interesting question. Okay. Says the Midrash. Classic answer of the Midrash. Why is he afraid? 1 second.
He'll survive in the end, but how he gets there can be very difficult and very horrible.
Say that again.
He'll survive in the end. His people will survive in the end, but how he gets there still can be horrible. Like we survived the Holocaust, but
we
went through the Holocaust.
Correct. That's one indication. The classic interpretation of why he's afraid is, the Midrash says, I just can't find this Midrash right now, 1 second. Why is he afraid? The Midrash says, Shema Yigram HaChet. He says, yes, God promised me, but at Tzadik, where is the Midrash? Here we are. Vayira Yaakov says the Midrash, Adam Shakadosh Baruch Hu Hivtiach, Haya Yare Umavachet. God made him a promise, and he's afraid. Ela Shamar Yaakov Avinu Oili Shema Yigram HaChet. Maybe I sin. God promised me X. That's great for the Yaakov that was then. But, I watched a couple of movies I shouldn't have watched, and maybe I should have been learning when I wasn't learning. Tzadikim who are great, they're always afraid, Shema Yigram HaChet. Maybe my sins have now reduced me to something that I shouldn't be, and therefore I should be punished. Okay? That's what the Midrash says. What do you think of that? Anyone? Why not? Why not?
You don't like it. He knows that.
Well, katonti mikol chasidim, he says, I'm not worthy. I mean, Yaakov, in fact, that it could be pshat. He says, you did all these great things for me. Some would suggest that it's not just that Yigram HaChet, God did promise me, but like there's a big calculator in the sky. You know what I'm saying? And we all want things, but you can't have everything. So if you get plenty and blessing in this world, then you're gonna pay for it in the next world. Like it all evens out in the end. So he says, look, I've got sheep and cattle, and I'm a great person, but maybe I cashed in my chips too early. And that I don't deserve everything. It's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. So the Kliyakar has a comment on this. He has a long little essay on this. And he says the following. He says, I don't understand why Yaakov would be afraid, Shema Yigrom HaChet, especially... When's the last time that God came to him and promised him that he'll protect him? When's the last time?
Right before he left.
Like 2 weeks ago, God came to me. How bad could you have been in the past 2 weeks? Like 2 weeks ago, God said, I'll protect you, and now you're afraid? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it really that bad? Are you really sure?
On the way. A lot has happened in those 2 weeks.
Well, Lavan came to him.
Rachel stole the trapim, and Lavan came,
by the way, he never knew that.
She lied, and da-da.
Lavan came, and what happened to Lavan? And what did he find with Lavan? Lavan came and said, I could have destroyed you. And what happened? Why am I not destroying you?
Maybe he's afraid he used up his round coins with Lavan.
What happened? Why did Yehoshua not destroy him? God came to Lavan in the middle of the night and said, leave him alone. Now all of a sudden you're afraid? Kliyakar says the following. You have Kliyakar. It's worth it. Kliyakar on Pasuk Chet.
Katanti?
It starts with Katanti, but then it goes on later. Vayira, no. Kliyakar on Vayira. I'm skipping to the answer. He says, V'hakarov Eli Lomar Beheter Safek Zeh. He says, the answer I have is, Amru Razal, say the sages, Amar Rabbi Elazar, said Rabbi Elazar, Kol Hamachnif L'chaveiro Sofo Nofel B'yado. Anyone who flatters his friend will fall into his hands. Chanifa is flattery. Ukumoken Kan Yaakov Hirgish Ba'atzmo Chet. Yaakov senses that he sinned B'zeshi Chnif L'rasha. He flattered Esav. V'amar Ko Amar Avdecha Yaakov. My, your servant Yaakov and Adoni Esav, and Esav, you're so awesome and you're so great. V'Yaakov asa kodesh chol. V'yikra le'Esav Adoni mitzad ha'chanufa. He made Esav, this brutish God only knows what he made, you're my master, you're so great, you're so awesome, and I'm nothing. Alkein haya mityare, he was afraid, ki yada Yaakov shekach yamida. He knew, shekol ha'machnif l'rasha, l'sof nofel b'yadam. So he said, why did Yaakov kiss up to Esav? Why did he kiss up to him? Because he was afraid. But then afterwards he said, oh my God, what did I do? I kissed up to this God only knows what. Maybe God will punish me for making that mistake. So the Kliyak said, was it good to kiss up to him? Is it good to send him presents? Is it, or is it bad to send him presents? Which is it? You know, he's afraid. He's going to, you know, tell them how powerful they are and how great they are. And now maybe I made a terrible mistake. What do you want from the guy? You know?
Reminds me of the classic moment when they were about to shake hands with the Oslo agreement and like Rabbi hesitates. And it was such a classic moment. You didn't want to shake the hand. You're shook in it. And you just realize you've just given them guns and you've given them this, but you won't shake the hand. It's like the same thing. You've given the door on, but the flattery, you realize there's something wrong with it.
Yeah.
Just reminded me of that.
Yeah.
That there's like a cognitive dissonance.
What's that?
Yeah.
Right. By the way, there is an isur of chanifa. I mentioned it. It's an isur in the Torah. Lo tachnifu otam. You're not allowed to flatter them. That a person that we're not allowed to flatter rishaim. Just so you know that it comes up in halach terminology. You're really not allowed to flatter people. So what do when you have a yeshiva and the dinner is honoring someone who doesn't live a Torah lifestyle at all and you're honoring them because of all the money that they give you? Are you permitted to do that or not?
Well, so it's not a
simple question.
And someone that doesn't.
Excuse me, someone who doesn't live a Torah lifestyle, doesn't
it's
uphold
not a Russia,
the Torah
necessarily.
At all. What if he's an arms dealer?
Okay, well, then you shouldn't be honoring him.
Happens all the time. What?
And they're doing something wrong.
Yeshivas are honoring arms dealers.
What?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, then they shouldn't be doing that.
One of the major benefactors of many, many Torah institutions was an arms dealer who lived in South America.
Another one in France.
Absolutely.
Then they shouldn't be honoring him.
But his money is very good. It supports many, many yeshivas.
Still should not be honoring him.
Well, that's always a question. It's always a question.
Well, maybe the yeshivas wouldn't exist.
I'm not telling you. I'm just mentioning this idea of lo tachnifu.
It's
a classical. And by the way, and I don't necessarily agree with you. What does it tell our children? It's always used to bother. What does it tell our children when we say to the children, "You have to act X Y Z. You have to behave X Y Z." And then at the dinner for that yeshiva, we say, "But we love Mr. Gold, who's the most important person, who's a Torah supporter, and we give him the Torah Beneficiary Support Award." And you know what I'm saying? So what does it teach our children?
We still need arms to protect your country.
That's what I said.
Well, whatever. Oh, anyway.
Let's be realistic.
Depends who you sell to.
Yeah.
You can tell them they're all the honorable ones.
So I have Kliyakar.
Can I just ask a question?
What's that?
Is it against Halakha to be an arms dealer?
It depends who you're selling the arms to.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess. Anyway, I saw the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar said, don't kiss up to him. Says the Midrash that when Yaakov split his army into two camps, the Midrash says, from Yalkut Avlichani, I never heard of the Yalkut, Tov Erech Apayim, Tov Erech Ruach, Shaloni kara Esav. Yaakov made a good idea. It was good not to bump into Esav, not to get him upset. Ela herichapo. Rather, he calmed him down. Ubalo derech shiflut. He lowered himself. That was a good idea. That was a smart thing to do. So what do you want? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the mafreshim are all over the place. What's the best way to handle the situation? Is it best to not kiss up to him or to kiss up to him? Is it best to appease him or not to appease him? And I would suggest that in the galut context in which we've seen, all that the mafreshim could relate to, as I've said, is this idea of we are powerless and our job is to survive. And the promise of Yaakov Avinu is that we will survive. Whereas later on, we're going to talk about it, but remember now, Yaakov comes back, right? He goes, he brings them all over the Nachal, into Eretz Yisrael, as it were, then he goes back and he has a struggle. With who?
The angel.
With the angel of? Of Esav, sort of. It's unclear, the Midrash says. Right? And then, somehow things change. And he goes to meet Esav, and he bows down. And I want to skip a little bit. And ask an interesting question. Okay, skip to Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33. Aleph. Oh, yeah, sure. Perek Lamed Gimel. Okay. Vayisa Yaakov Einav. So Yaakov lifts up his hand. And by the way, I just wanted to. Yeah, he picks up his eyes. Vayar Bihine Esav Ba. And Esav is coming. V'imo arba me'ot ish. There are 400 men. V'yachatz et al yeladim al Leah v'al Rachel v'al shtei hashfachot. And he divides up the children with their mothers. I have a question. What happened to the two camps?
Yeah.
What happened to the two camps?
Maybe it doesn't count his family.
It sounds like he's doing now.
He already told us he has 400 men.
So somehow between then and then between now, he split them up. So did they ever really split? Were they planned to split and then they decided not to split? No, on the mothers. He just said all the children hang out with their mothers.
Oh, okay.
So you see who's most important. Imagine if you're like, yeah, you guys go first, right? Okay. No, we didn't do that. Hu avar lifneihem v'yishtachu arza sheva pa'amim ad gishto ad achiv. He bowed down 7 times. This is still, he really, really is like bowing, prostrating himself, putting himself in front of. Vayaratz Esav likrato. Esav runs to greet him. Vayichabkehu, and he hugs him. Vayipol al tzavarav. He fell on his neck. Vayishakehu, and he kissed him. Vayivku. And they cried. What's the obvious question?
What are the dots?
Well, before we get to the dots, what's the obvious question? Well, if Esav came with the 400 men, what's the purpose of the 400 men, obviously?
To fight.
To fight. So then what's the question? Why didn't he follow through? Why didn't Esav do it? What's that? Change his mind?
Brotherly love.
Ah, very good. Change his mind?
Maybe he wanted to see how he would react to him.
What do you mean how he reacted? They bowed down to him. He's like, oh, the brotherly love. They kissed each other. They hugged each other. So this is a very, 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 very famous Rashi. Okay? Very good. So if you'll notice on the word Vayishakehu, what do you see?
Dots.
Famous dots. In the Torah itself, there are dots. Okay? Says Rashi, Vayishakehu. Well, first of all, let's go to the first Rashi. Dalid, Vayichabkehu. He hugged him. Nidgalgulu rachamav kishira'ehu. His compassion was enlarged. His compassion was invoked. When he saw him, mishtachaveh kol hishtachavot halala. He bowed down. So Rashi says, Rashi's following along. It was a good idea to bow down. Yaakov prostrated himself. And Esav had a compassion. He felt bad. He decided, I'm not going to destroy him. Vayishakehu nakud alav. There are dots upon it. What do the dots mean? It's a machloket. Can't tell you. Some to read out the dots. Lomar. He didn't kiss him with all his heart. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Said Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Halachahi. It's a halacha. Biyadua she'esav sone liyaakov. It is a known thing that Esav hates Yaakov. Ella shenimchmeru rachamav be'oto sha'ah. Rather, his compassion was be'oto sha'ah.
That time.
Benashko b'chol libo. And he kissed him with all of his heart. You should just know, if you're a student of Rashi, you all know, where does Rashi get his stuff from?
Midrash.
Okay? Rashi gets all his stuff from the Midrash. This is a, how shall we say this? It is a total jumbling of three different Midrashim. So I have to read you the Midrash. Because Rashi says some very interesting things. Halachahi, it's a halacha, biyadua she'esav soneh liyakov. It's known that Esav hates Yaakov. I mean, how do we normally quote it? I'll read you the Midrash. There's three opinions here. Okay? Did he? So then, if he kissed him, what do the dots tell you? That he kissed him with all his heart or not with all his heart?
No, not with all his heart.
So then why did he say b'chol libo? Kiss him b'chol libo, be'oto sha'ah. Kiss him with all his heart, but he wouldn't kiss him with all his heart. If he really hated him deep down, he would kiss him...
partially.
Give him an air kiss.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? He would kiss him... He felt bad, so he's not going to destroy him. I really hate your guts, but I'm not going to kill you. By the way, this Midrash has deep, 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 fundamental historical connotations. The reason I'm asking is, that, okay, we know that Esav, for a period of time, hated Yaakov. Is it a halacha? Is it entrenched? Is it eternal? Or is it biyadua? And I'm going to read you the Midrash. What? There are different midrashim. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, and I'm reading carefully. You have to read the midrashim very carefully. Shimon ben Yochai says, "Biyadua she'esav sone et Yaakov." What does biyadua mean?
No.
What did Rashi say?
Biyadua she'esav.
Halacha. What's the difference between halacha and biyadua? Rashi added halacha.
We have to act in accordance to that.
Law. What is a halacha? When we say halacha, what does that mean, halacha? Halacha means it's an eternal truth. Biyadua means it's a known fact. Those are very different things. Fundamentally different. Okay? I thought that was like, a school bell or something. Biyadua is it's a known fact. Halacha is it's a done deal. Okay? But nonetheless, it'd be yadua. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar skips. Why the dots? Blah, blah, blah. Okay? Milamed. He teaches you the dots. Shenichmiru rachamav be'oto sha'ah. Unishako b'chol libo.
Who said that?
Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He doesn't have the biyadua she'esav shonisone et Yaakov. Okay? Amar lo Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai says what? Why is there a nikudot? Why don't any dots tell me that he kissed him? If he really hates him, like the dots are there, if he really kissed him, vayichabkeyu, I would just say vayichabkeyu. The dots seem to say he kissed him, but there's something there. Melamed, it teaches us, shelo ba linashko, he didn't come to kiss him, ala linashko, he tried to bite him. V'naset tzavarosh shel Yaakov avinu shayish. Yaakov's neck turned into... So what, by the way, and that's true, what are the dots? Teeth marks. In the text. You like that? And v'kahu shinav shel Esav harasha. And the hake et shinav. He's broke his teeth. Okay. V'la matam olom v'ayivku, then why'd they cry? Ela ze boche al tzavaro. One guy is crying about his neck. And the other guy's crying because he has to now go to the... He has to get, dental work. Which is it? See, it's very important. There are three opinions in the Midrash. One opinion is, Esav eternally hates us. Halachahi Esav shoneh soneh et Yaakov.
Who said that third Midrash?
The second opinion is, Beyadua. There's actually four. Beyadua Esav soneh et Yaakov. We know Esav hates Yaakov, so it was only temporary. Third opinion is, Nichmiru machma ba'oto sha'ah. He did hate him. Unshako b'cholibo. It's unclear if it's eternal. He doesn't say that they all hate us. And the fourth opinion is he tried to bite him. He hated him at that moment.
Okay. That Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai spent his life in a
cave
because
they were running after him, persecuting him. I would ask you today: does Esav hate Yaakov today? Would you say that it's an eternal truth that Esav hates Yaakov?
No, depends on the century.
What?
Christians are much more Jew-centered.
Yeah, they are.
It's their own game.
Yeah. For years it was true with the Christians.
It's not an eternal truth.
What? It's a fun. It's a complicated question. But would we say today that there's an innate hatred, a hatred of the Jewish people?
Yes.
Would we say that?
Right now, from the Christians.
Esav, Sonia, et Yaakov.
I would say that. Read the commentaries on any article that slightly criticizes Israel, and boy, are they.
Look at England. Look at England.
I don't know, but much of European anti-Semitism today is Arab-driven. Much of it is Arab-driven.
I don't know. England is a Christian country, and
so you're saying, but you're so what you're saying. So you have two perspectives. This is a question of two perspectives. One could say that all of the love that we see, and there's a lot of love. All the love that we see is only temporary.
But it's also for
it's a nichmeru rachamav, or it's self-interested.
It's totally self-interested.
Right. On the one hand, and it's all in their benefit, and it's lurking below the surface, but really Esav Sonei et Yaakov, it's a halakha. Or you could say, see, in the end, it's interesting.
According to prophecy, it's not eternal.
What?
So according to prophecy, it's not eternal.
Well, if you say halakha, if you say halakha, according to the Midrash, halakha, Rashi says, is eternal. You don't change the halakha. That's what we know. That's why, if Rashi says it's a halakha, that's a powerful word. That's an unalterable word. It doesn't change. Whereas if you say biyadua, so what happened to Esav and Yaakov in the end? In the end, when Esav in the Torah, what happened? They go their own way, and when the father dies,
they both bury him.
They come together. Yeah. Except the Midrash, because of the Midrash attitude, continues to read in this hatred that Eliphaz and they ran after. Right. The Midrash continues to read in this hatred, but in the Pshat, like. I want to be hopeful and say that there's doesn't have to be this eternal hatred.
His head in the tomb.
Right, exactly. Head in the tomb. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's very all those midrashim. Correct. Is there a place for hope or not? Is there a place to say that we don't have to eternally fight Esav? That Esav can really be on our side, even if they're not fighting our fight.
Yes.
Or are we forced to say, really, Esav sonei et Yaakov? And if we're going to fight our fight, we have to worry about ourselves. We have to be worried about our interests because their interests are not interests. And even if they're kissing us now, either they're kissing us because they're temporarily loving us or they're really trying to bite us. What has to guide us?
What?
So
what does that say about the
times
of Mashiach?
In the times of Mashiach, we win.
We've already gone through all this.
We win.
So then what?
Why do they leave us alone?
They don't exist.
Because of course they exist, because we represent the path to godliness. Because when we...
But then what happens to their hatred?
To?
To their hatred.
The truth is revealed.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
But then still, there's no...
Everybody understand, these are ancient discussions that have true critical ramifications. True ramifications. The problem is... Like I said to my friend, I said to my neighbor, I said, I really feel like we're missing, I think I've said this in the shir before, we need a new parshanut. It has to be a parshanut that's
tzioni.
The word is not tzioni. The word is
contemporary.
Contemporary in the sense that it interprets the Torah from a perspective of a nation of Israel that sees the galut versus the modern. As opposed to, because Parshanim, what they did was, and it's understandable, Rashi, all the Parshanim, they looked at, even Ramban is explicit. He says, see, the Torah is describing our time. That's what Ramban says. The Torah is describing our, he says explicitly, it's describing our existence. And he uses it as a comfort to promise that no matter how much we suffer, we'll still survive. And it was true. But where's the Parshan that comes and says, see, the Torah is describing our time. And it's describing our reality. Because it does. Because there is the Galut, but somebody has to come along and say, what about the Israel? You know, and we don't get to this, but just so you know, in this parasha, there's a whole Ma'aseh Dina, and the fight with Yaakov and his brother. So Yaakov is the Yaakov attitude. And the brother, what do the brothers say? What?
They're going to go and take revenge.
Because why? Well, then we'll come full circle from how we started.
Because they can't embarrass the children.
Because sometimes you have to fight and play dirty in order to accomplish your goals.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Right. But that's different than, oh my God, I have to be meek, oh my brother Esau is going to come and destroy me. That's very different. Very, very different. All right, we'll stop here.